Hello, this is Dr. John Davis. I'm a psychology instructor at AB Tech, and today we are going to talk about the certain aspects, anyway, of social psychology. Social psychology probably to me is one of the most interesting areas of psychology. I know that when I was in school, it was the course that grabbed me the most, the one that I was the most interested in as a very young man. There are certain questions that get answered in the area of social psychology that is sort of fun to deal with. For example, how does being in a group affect our behavior? An example of the kind of question that comes out of that is, are we more or less likely to help someone if others are around? How likely are we to help someone who needs it anyway? That sort of thing. Other and sort of less obvious questions that get answered in social psychology are, how far will the average person go when asked to inflict pain on someone else? And what conditions cause more people to be willing to do that to a very high degree and some to a very low degree? Is the situation or the personality more important in determining what people would do or will do in any given situation? So is it the bad apples in the barrel, or is it the barrel? Another question that comes up in social psychology is, what is attractiveness all about? And how does this change through the years? For example, what about body style and what people find attractive? In the 20s, 1920s, for example, the very thin look was in. And then along about 1950s, the more plump Marilyn Monroe look was in. And then it went back the other way again. So how does that vary across time? And how does that vary across culture? Or in relation to your surroundings? And how important is it to people, attractiveness, that sort of thing? That kind of thing gets answered by social psychology. What conditions promote aggressive behavior and what conditions promote cooperation? Those sorts of things get looked at. And what does this all have to say about approaching our interactions with other people? And what does it say to us even about international interactions? How we respond to other countries. So all of that is dealt with in social psychology, but we begin with something called attribution theory. And that is, to what do you attribute, or what causes do you come up with when you are thinking about the question of why does something happen? Let me see if I can make that clearer. If you look at the word attribution, it's attribute. It comes from attribute. So the question is, to what do we attribute what has just happened? There are always two choices. You can blame the situation, or you can blame the person, the personality. And in psychology, there is something that has been identified called the fundamental attribution error. The fundamental attribution error is this. We tend to lean toward blaming the people rather than the situation too much. We are more likely to blame the people when it is actually the situation that has set up the problem to begin with. Let me see if I can give you some examples. A famous study that was done was the Stanford Prison Study, and a psychologist named Zimbardo set this up many years ago. It was back during the era of riots and that sort of thing, peace riots. And these were happening about the time of the hippie era, back in the late 60s, early 70s. And in this experiment, he took two groups of people, and these were college students, and divided them into prison guards and prisoners. he didn't give them much in the way of direction, but he put the prisoners in a cell-like structure. Each of them had a cell that they shared with a couple of people in the basement of a building in the psych department at Stanford. And those people began to act like prisoners and carry out many of the actions we see from prisoners in prison. The guards, on the other hand, began to act like guards and started to do things to harass the prisoners, to almost torture them. They wouldn't have allowed actual torture, of course, but certainly began to harass them, wake them up in the middle of the night when they got mad at them for something, seek all kinds of revenge against the prisoners. So without going into a lot of detail about what happened, you can look it up and read about the Stanford prison study, and it's very interesting. There are a couple of videos around on it, but it explains how the situation often creates behavior, or at least influences behavior, to the point that the individual's personal feelings or personal values are overcome by the situation. Now, you may think that your own values would not be overcome by a situation, but there may be conditions under which they would be. And this particular situation showed that. For example, the guards' individual personalities were shown. One guard in particular just became a real terror. Another guard, even though he did not step in and interrupt any of the near atrocities that were going on, he managed to get out and be the gopher. He would go get food for all the other guards so he wouldn't have to witness what they were doing with the inmates. So even those who would not participate acted differently than we would like for them to have acted. And probably that, as they look back on it, differently than they would like for themselves to have acted. Well, so this is an example of the fundamental attribution error. If you say those guards were just bad people, you know, they're just mean people, and so that's why they did what they did. But if you say it's the situation, then you are attributing what happened to the situation, not to the personalities. A good example in real life, of course, is Abu Ghraib, and there's a lot of reinforcement for the people involved in that to blame the individuals who were there. A lot of reinforcement for everyone to say those were just a few bad apples and not everyone in the army is like that. And of course, even though that statement has some truth to it, the truth is, the real truth, the deeper truth, is that that situation created that outcome. And that outcome was bound to happen sooner or later because of the situation. Now, of course, the higher-ups don't want to admit that, because then they have to take the blame because they're the ones who created the situation. The rest of us don't want to admit that because we have to then admit that in the same situation we might have done the same thing, and we don't want to say that. So all of us blame the few bad apples, and it's reinforcing for us to do that, the so-called few bad apples. We'd rather think that than to think that the situation just created that. So, the truth is, of course, that we have made the fundamental attribution error. We have blamed the personalities rather than the situation. Now, I'm not saying that always this is the case, but or that all people in that situation would have acted that way. So don't hear me say that. I'm saying that the odds go up that things are going to happen like that in that kind of situation. We have raised the odds by changing the situation. Lester Maddox made the, if you may remember, one of the older governors of Georgia, Lester Maddox. He was a bigot, and in his early life at least, and probably through most of his life. And he was elected governor of Georgia at one point, and they were having a lot of trouble in the prisons in Georgia. And Lester Maddox made the statement that our problem is we just need a better class of prisoners around here. We just don't have a very high-class prisoner, and that's why we have so much trouble. Well, it's a prison. What did he expect? So it's not the apple's fault. It's the barrel's fault, for the most part. Let's see if I can think of another example. Sheriff, a man named Sheriff, did a study with boys at a camp, and he put them in competitive situations. He divided them into two groups, and then these two groups were competing against each other for various prizes and that sort of thing. And pretty soon these boys started to fight between the two groups. They played horrible tricks on each other, hazed each other from group to group, that sort of thing. There was a lot of trouble that the counselors were having in this camp. But the whole thing was set up to be a study of, are these bad apples, or is it the situation? Well, so he came in at one point after all this trouble was going on, and he documented, of course, all the trouble that had happened, a number of fights and that sort of thing. And then he changed the entire situation. He gave, instead of dividing the boys into two groups, he gave them both of the groups, a common goal, an overriding goal that they were all supposed to be seeking. I won't go into a lot of detail about this. You can look this up. But he changed their goal from beating the other group at various competitive activities to a common goal. Now all these boys are going after the same thing. They all get whatever reinforcers he's going to give them by going after this common goal. And the entire atmosphere at this camp changed. Now they became cooperative. They became jovial mates, is the way he said it. They became happy with each other. The entire atmosphere changed at this camp once they had a common goal and they were reinforced equally as they reached their common goal. So again, it was not the bad apples, although the counselors who were there wanted to blame the bad apples. They wanted to say, well, these kids, you know, they're just juvenile delinquents, and they act this way. They fight and they play tricks on each other and that sort of thing. That's what they wanted to do. But as soon as he changed the situation, as soon as he changed the barrel that they were in, then their behavior changed. Other examples that I've seen in my own life are in the management consulting that I used to do. One hospital where I consulted, for example, we did over 400 projects in this hospital that changed that kind of situation and turned what people thought were bad employees into good employees. One particular area was phlebotomy. These phlebotomists were supposed to go and collect blood samples, and it was a very depressed group. They would sit around and whine and say things to each other like, you go, I went last time, and it's your turn. I've been going every time. I went three times yesterday, and you only went one, and that sort of thing was going on between the people in the group. And the supervisor's natural tendency was to blame the people, you know, to think, well, if we just had a better group of people in here working this job, we'd not have all these problems. But she was bright enough to realize, once she got the training, that it wasn't the bad apples in her group, it was the barrel, that there was no reinforcement set up, no forces in place to make their job interesting or to make their lives interesting. In fact, they were considered sort of the lowest people on the totem pole in this particular hospital. So she changed all that. She went in and she put a graph up on the wall, and each time someone went and did a blood draw, they would come and move their little particular bird is what it was. She had birds sitting on a fence, one for each person, and you would get to move your bird up off the fence and up a notch if you went and did a blood draw. And they became friendly, competitive about it. They would try to get the most blood draws in a day, and they would kid each other. And the entire atmosphere of the place changed. She told me about 6 weeks later, in fact, that not only were they doing more work and responding faster to the calls to go do blood draws and that sort of thing, some of the things that they measured in that department, but the whole atmosphere had changed. Instead of being depressed, they were having fun with each other. They were enjoying their work. They were trying to get better at it. She found ways to measure the quality of their skill, the quality of their blood draws, and gave them feedback on that, and reinforced them as a group as their numbers went up with these skills. She didn't pit them against each other. She measured them as a group. And the entire atmosphere changed. She changed the barrel. She had the same apples that were there before. She simply changed the barrel. And this has happened time and time again throughout my own career as a management consultant. It happens in schools. We used to say in the company I used to work for that if the students didn't learn, the teacher didn't teach. Now, teachers don't like to look at it that way. Many teachers don't. Many teachers like to look at it as, well, these is just these students. They don't work as hard as students used to. They don't read their materials. They don't study right. I tell them, but they don't do it. That sort of thing. And the truth is, it's the barrel. It's not the apples. If the student didn't learn, the teacher didn't teach. So our solution to the problem needs to be to set up the forces, set up the reinforcers for people to do the things we want them to do, rather than let them run free and be subject to the natural reinforcers out there or subject to the kinds of reinforcement that's out there for the wrong behavior. So those are just some examples of the fundamental attribution error and how we all make it. It's better not to deny that you make that error. We all do. As I said earlier, it is much more reinforcing to blame the people than either to blame ourselves or to blame the situation. But more often than not always, but more often than not, it is the situation creating the problem. And if we change the situation, we can change what happens. Here's another example. internationally, for example, we have a problem with our borders with Mexico. And you have to ask yourself, why is that? I mean, we don't have a problem with our Canadian border. Why do we have a problem with our Mexican border? And if you look at it from the point of view of someone who lives in Mexico, a third world country, you can understand it. I mean, here's a line, an imaginary line drawn across a piece of land, and on one side of it there is hunger and starvation, and there is dirt, and there is sewage, and there is unpleasant life, there's illness, and on the other side of this line there is America, a very different place, a place where there's work, where there's cleanliness, where there is health. So why would they not want to cross the border? Now, what's the solution? Because there are lots of problems with everyone from one country wanting to go to another. What is the solution to the problem? Is it to build a larger fence? Is it to electrify the fence? Is it to hire more guards to keep them out? If such a wonderful place is just the other side of a line, people will do anything, take any kind of risk to get over that line. So that is not the eventual answer. These are not bad apples trying to come over to our barrel. These are people who are in a bad barrel and trying to get out of it so that they don't become bad apples. The solution, if there is one, is to bring about change where they are, to help make that place better. And actually, there are a few American companies who are trying to do that, because they are setting up plants in Mexico, hiring Mexican workers, and making it more pleasant for them by having a little bit higher salaries than they could make in other ways, or having a way for them to make a salary at all. They've been criticized, of course, for taking their company outside of America, and so it doesn't happen that much. But the real answer to this is probably to help Mexico become a better place to live, and then people won't want to leave it. And I'm not saying that's easy. I know what we have to deal with and what the government has to deal with in order to make that happen. But that needs to be the long-term goal, not putting up a better fence.
Okay.
Well, the Abu Ghraib situation was interesting, because Zimbardo went to Abu Ghraib, went over when he saw that the people were being blamed, the guards were being blamed for what happened at Abu Ghraib. And he immediately got on the plane and went to where they were being tried, and tried to convince the powers that be that it was a bad situation, and almost anyone would have acted like they did, given the conditions, given the directions they were given, the lack of training, the situation in which their friends had been killed by these people, and all of those things, all of those elements of the situation, that many people would have acted the same way. And these were not just bad apples. I don't know how successful he was in convincing them, but he did have the results from his own prison experience to show them. And so he probably got those people a lighter sentence than they would have gotten otherwise. Okay, well, there are a lot of other interesting experiments, and this particular introduction's gone on long enough, so let me just mention a couple of them, and then we'll move on, close out this introduction to social psychology. Another of the most interesting experiments ever done in psychology was the one by Stanley Milgram that showed how far people would go in obeying an authority figure, someone they respected. And what he found was that they will go quite far. I'm not going to go into that experiment, but it's a very, very interesting one, and we will take it up perhaps in a later podcast. Another interesting incident that occurred in the area of social psychology was the Kitty Genovese incident, in which a woman was raped in a doorway in New York, and a great many people actually saw this happen through their windows in the apartment building, and no one called the police. No one did anything to interfere. The perpetrator actually came back 15 or 20 minutes later and did it again, and still no one called. It was it made the newspapers, of course, all over the country, and psychologists began to wonder why. Why is it no one called? And the truth is that responsibility is diffused. My former boss in this consulting firm I used to work for, Aubrey Daniels, used to say anything that is everybody's job is nobody's job. And that's why in CPR classes, for example, they train you when you arrive on a scene and then there's a crowd standing around this person who's down on the ground, that you point to someone and you say, "You go call 911. Because what is known is, if you just shout, "Somebody call 911, the odds aren't very high that someone actually will. Everyone will assume that someone else is doing it. Well, this is the kind of thing that comes up in social psychology. It's a lot of fun to think about. And if you know these things, you can go ahead and make some decisions yourself about how you might act in similar situations, and make some decisions about how you would act. For example, if you see one person beating up another, how would you interfere or not? Would you call the police or not? That kind of thing. And if you make those decisions ahead of time, you're more likely to act appropriately than if you just respond to the pressures or lack of pressures when you're in a group. So that's the great value, I think, of understanding these things. And understanding also how situations can overcome us, how the reinforcement and punishment involved naturally in a situation can pull our behavior in a certain direction. All right. This is Dr. John Davis. Thanks for listening.